My friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. The website is weekendinterviewshow.com. Keep all the archives there for you in MP3 format, including, I don't know, three or four with my next guest, who I'd like to have on at least once a month or two, because we haven't gone to war against Iran yet. And if there's anybody in America who can explain why it's really not necessary to go to war against Iran, it's Gordon Prather. He writes for WorldNet Daily and for antiwar.com. He's a Navy veteran, nuclear physicist, was a nuclear bomb tester at the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory and technical director of underground testing at Sandia National Laboratories. He was the former chief scientist of the U.S. Army, advisor to Congressman Henry Bellman, and a close associate of Pete Domenici as well. And like I said, writes for WorldNet Daily, that's WND.com, and for antiwar.com as well. Welcome back to the show, Gordon.
Thank you, Scott, and always a pleasure.
All right. Well, and let's get the obligatory, you're not some pinko, right, out of the way.
Hardly. There are a number of us that were Cold Warriors that somewhere along in, I guess, around 2002, you know, we were members in good standing fighting the Cold War, and we began to look around.
You were fighting the Cold War until 2002, Gordon?
No, it was in 2002 that we looked around and discovered that maybe some of the Cold Warriors had a different agenda than we did when we were defending this country against possible all-out war with the Soviet Union.
I see. So the fact that you're about to spend the next hour explaining the details of United Nations treaties and stuff like that is not because you're some world government favoring Atlanticist pinko type, right?
Right. I worked, you didn't mention I was a legislative assistant to Senator Henry Bellman of Oklahoma during the Carter years. And during that period of time, Senator Bellman, who was a fairly conservative Republican, opposed the SALT II treaty, the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty, SALT II, but it, not because he didn't trust the Russians, but he didn't trust some of the people on our side that were negotiating the treaty. And then he also was very unhappy that it was the energy crisis, if you recall, if you were around in those days.
Just barely.
Yeah, and some of these so-called Cold Warriors were refusing to allow us to provide Russia, Soviet Union in those days, equipment to help them produce more oil. There was a real shortage, and there was a real concern about that. And these people were basically, they weren't really concerned about our defense so much as they were beating the Soviets and the Russians over the head with clubs and until they weren't moving anymore. And these people are still at it. Our president right now is over there in the Baltic states, chastising the Russia for what they did in World War II. Well, of course, it wasn't Russia in World War II, it was the Soviet Union.
Never mind the fact that we entered World War II to save the Soviet Union in the first place.
Well, I think that that's an argument some people make, and maybe it's true.
All right, hang on, Gordon. We don't have time, man. We're going out to break. It's the Weekend Interview Show. I'm talking with Gordon Prather. He's got an article up today on WorldNet Daily and at antiwar.com. Check it out. We'll be right back.
Let's play.
All right, my friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott, and I'm talking with Gordon Prather. He writes for antiwar.com, and he used to blow up nuclear bombs for a living, knows all about them, and also happens to know all about the details of the Non-Proliferation Treaty and the relationship between the International Atomic Energy Agency and Iran and Europe and the United States and all this complicated stuff. And if you were to read his articles on antiwar.com, you would have a much greater understanding of this situation than you could possibly get from watching the TV news on any given day. And this is why I always bring Gordon back on the show, because, you know, I barely understand this as it is, and I read everything he writes. And, you know, the war hasn't happened yet. There's still time to stop it. And so in my fantasy, where I pretend that this show means anything to anybody and could possibly have the slightest effect on world history, you know, I got to bring Gordon on to discredit the national government of the United States and their attempts to basically set Iran up. As Ray McGovern just discussed, we're perfectly willing to set Iraq up to invade them if necessary, and we'll do the same thing with Iran. So that's why Gordon's back on the show today. And Gordon, right now, or last week and this next week, I suppose, is the 7th conference to review the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And I know you got plenty to say, so why don't you just start with what's going on at this conference? Who's who, and what are they trying to do?
Okay, let's take off from your comments just now and try to integrate in what I said about the neo-crazies that we thought were cold warriors like the rest of us, who see, we all heaved a great sigh of relief when the Warsaw Pact disintegrated and the Soviet Union disintegrated. But these people, they just put the pedal to the metal, you know. I mean,
we're looking for new excuses.
Their agenda was not over. And I know another guest you had, Scott Ritter, as he's been widely misquoted. But what he really said was that President Bush had asked the Pentagon to prepare a plan of attack or something like that, maybe an invasion plan, I'm not sure what, by June. In other words, they were supposed to have a plan by June of this year to take out the alleged Iranian nuclear weapons program. Okay? Now, that will inevitably, if anyone launches such a plan, if the president pushes the button and we attack and take out the Iranian alleged nuclear weapons program, the principal thing it will do is we'll destroy a Russian-built reactor at Bushehr in Iran, which is nearing completion. I think it will probably not go online until next year, even if we don't attack it. But, you know, they've started shipping fuel to the reactor, and they're ready to load it in there and do some of the early tests. There will be Russian technicians there. The fuel belongs to the Russians. They built the reactor. It's a Russian design. The reactor is subject to IAEA safeguards, International Atomic Energy Agency safeguards. There will be international IAEA inspectors there. There will be monitors, environmental monitors, and all these other kind of things around this plant. And that doesn't bother neo-crazies. I mean, they're trying to provoke Russia into committing suicide by attacking us anyway. But let's go back to this timeline of why June of this year is critical. And other than the fact that that's when the president is allegedly told the Pentagon to be ready to destroy all of these alleged facilities. Okay, as you just pointed out, and on our last conversation, we talked about these, I think there were four branch points. The first one was whether or not we, the United States, John Bolton, could successfully remove from being Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, and that's the agency that is given the authority, given the responsibility under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and they're having the review conference for the 7th, every 5 years, whatever that is, the 7th review conference for the Non-Proliferation Treaty, right now as we speak, for the rest of this month, up in New York City at UN headquarters. And John Bolton, the United States, has been attempting for ever since the Iraq War, the invasion of Iraq, Operation Iraqi Freedom, we've been attempting to get him removed as Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, because before the invasion of Iraq in 2003, he had reported, Al-Baradei had reported to the UN Security Council that there was no indication whatsoever that Iraq had a nuclear program, nuclear weapons program, and in fact didn't even have a nuclear program, that the IAEA had destroyed everything that they had by 1992, 93.
Well, no wonder we got to get rid of him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was. It's just terrible. I mean, you know, under some circumstances, President Bush and maybe Colin Powell and a few other people could have been prosecuted by, under international courts as war criminals for just ignoring totally this clean bill of health that Al-Baradei had given to Iraq. Okay, so that was supposed to have occurred between the time of our last conversation and now. Well, they got to put that off because they discovered that they had to get one-third of the 35-member board of the International Atomic Energy Agency to vote against Al-Baradei, being given another term as Director General. And so they had to get, I don't know, what's a third of 35? Let's say 11. Well, it turns out we only had one vote, our vote. 34 votes would have been against us, you know. The 34 votes, he would have been nominated. I mean, he would have been given another term.
So we didn't ask him to hold a vote at all.
So, yeah, that's right. So they put it off until after June of 2005.
Yeah, when it doesn't matter anymore because the war's over.
Well, yeah. And then the next thing that was going to happen was Bolton's confirmation hearings to be ambassador to the UN. Well, as you know, that got put on hold, too. And so we get to the third point without anything being decided. And the third point is, of course, the review conference that is going on right now. And then the fourth point that we talked about would have been whether or not the talks collapse between the European Union and Iran over what is allegedly the United States, Bolton, and people like that would say that the purpose of these talks, the purpose of this agreement that will be reached maybe and maybe not between the European Union and with Iran, would be to assure the Europeans that the Iranian nuclear programs were strictly peaceful. Well, you know, the IAEA already does that. So that's not the reason. That's not what the European Union and the Iranian talks are about. It's all about whether or not the European Union can resist the pressure from the United States, from our government, and it's not just this administration. We've had pressure on them for more than 20 years to not have normal trade relations with Iran, ever since the hostage crisis in the 70s. So you can't blame all that on Bush. Can't even blame it all on the neo-crazies. But in any case, it's a continuing thing, and the European Union, it would like to establish these, they would like to resist the pressure of the United States, and they would like to resume normal trade relations with Iran, because Iran has got all this oil and all this natural gas. I think it's the second largest reserves of natural gas on the planet. Well, in any case, that agreement is still tottering along. Any day now, the Iranians may say, okay, we're not getting anywhere on this normalization of trade. So what we're going to do is we're going to start talking more to the Chinese and to the Russians, and they have resisted in the past some of the pressure from the United States, and they have provided Iran with certain things, like, for example, this reactor that's about to go online. The United States did everything we could think of, practically, to pressure Yeltsin and now Putin to not build that reactor. And they went ahead and did it anyway. And they're going to build five more, apparently. And so, you know, the European Union is looking at Well, if we give in to the United States, then Iran's going to turn to China and Russia big time, and we'll never have these normalized trade relations. Okay, well, what I wanted to talk to you about was this thing that's going on right now. That's the
conference, the review conference.
Yeah, the review conference. What happens is that every 5 years, the 184 signatories, almost everybody, almost every country on the planet is a signatory to the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. At the last review conference, which occurred in 2000, Bill Clinton was president, Albright was Secretary of State. There were a number of things that came out of that review conference that were essentially were to be taken up as major items, what do you want to call them, agenda items, in the seventh review conference. And both of them, let's take two of them. Two
okay,
of them
quick, Gordon, we got about half a minute.
Okay.
Less. Well, forget it. We're going to go to this break. It's the Weekend Interview Show on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm Scott, and we're talking with Gordon Prather. He's got an article today called Iran Defends the NPT on antiwar.com. We'll be right back. Guys, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott. I'm talking with Gordon Prather, nuclear expert. Go ahead, Gordon.
Well, what I was in the middle of is that President Clinton and Albright presided over the sixth Nonproliferation Treaty Review Conference 5 years ago. And the outcome of that conference were a number of undertakings that are, undertakings or proclamations or something like that, that this administration, the Bush administration, the Bolton administration, is extremely unhappy about. So they're lowballing this, or they're trying to minimize the proceedings that are going on right now in New York, to the extent that ordinarily the Secretary of State would make our presentation to that conference. But not only did the Secretary of State not do it, the Deputy Secretary of State didn't do it, the Undersecretary of State, that's Bolton, didn't do it, and they've got all the way down to all the way down to an Assistant Secretary named Stephen Rademacher. And he made a presentation, basically, that said, we'd like you to consider a whole bunch of things that haven't got anything to do with the nuclear the NPT. And we don't want you to spend any time discussing these things that came out of the sixth conference. Okay, so Rademacher says, what we want you to do is to concentrate on President Bush's suggestions that that you all sign on to his Proliferation Security Initiative, which is Bolton's creation, Undersecretary Bolton's creation, which is based upon the National Security Strategy of President Bush that was enunciated first in 2002. Which concentrates very heavily or focuses very heavily on preemptive attacks to prevent proliferation, you know. And President Bush essentially wants to be able to decide when you need to do that. Well, let's go back to the things that came out of the sixth conference. One of the first things, of course, which causes the Bush administration a lot of grief, is that Clinton essentially promised and set out 13 steps to be taken for the United States and the other nuclear weapon states to totally get rid of their nuclear stockpiles. Now, it's hard to believe, but that's what he did. And one of the ways that Clinton proposed to do that, of course, was to get everybody in the world to sign the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. And his theory was that, well, if you can't test a nuclear weapon, then you can never be sure that the thing would work. And furthermore, if after 20 years or so, even the weapons that you have tested will probably not be any good anymore, and so the world will just automatically, over a period of time, not have any more nuclear weapons. Okay, that's one thing. Well, then the second thing was the conference came out with a very strong statement about how the proliferation of nuclear weapons, it's the International Atomic Energy Agency that is essentially given the authority and the responsibility for determining when that has occurred or is about to occur. Well, of course, Bolton and Bush don't want the International Atomic Energy Agency and El Baradei in the position of deciding who they ought to be able to bomb and who not to be able to bomb. So that's one of the reasons that they don't want to talk about that provision that came out of the sixth conference. And then there's a third one, which is the conferees in the sixth conference recommended that there get to be some legally binding agreement. It's implied in the treaty already, but they want a legally binding agreement that the nuclear power states, the nuclear weapon states, United States, Russia, France, UK, and China, will agree or promise on a stack of Korans or something like that they will never attack a state that doesn't have nuclear weapons. Okay?
Yeah. Well, we don't want that to be binding on us, because that's the only people we pick on as countries that couldn't possibly defend themselves against us.
Yeah, people we sure don't have nuclear weapons.
Look out, Canada. We're coming for your ass next.
I don't know. Well, I don't know. I've talked for a long time without what can I do to tell you? So we've got this situation where now that the elections have gone the way they are in the Great Britain, the United Kingdom, England, we are more and more alone on this issue.
Let me see if I understand you right here, Gordon.
The non-proliferation treaty are against us.
Gordon.
And they see us as, let me just tell you, this is an example. This is the closing remarks by the Iranian foreign minister who addressed the...
You know what, Gordon, why don't you go ahead and hold that until we get back from this break? Because we only got about 30 seconds before we go
right
into this break here. But basically, I mean, what I'm to understand is that America is doing everything it can to undermine the non-proliferation treaty, because if it was really in full operation, then it would be working against our presumed interests. That's basically what's going on here. All right, we'll be right back. Talking with Gordon Prather. He writes for Antiwar.com and WorldNet Daily.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
My friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. Website is weekendinterviewshow.com. Keep all the archives there in MP3 format for you. Feel free to check that out. You can email me at scott@weekendinterviewshow.com or scott@antiwar.com. Be happy to communicate back and forth with you if you like. And I'm talking with fellow antiwar.com writer Gordon Prather. He knows all about nuclear bombs, building them and testing them and blowing them up. And unlike 99.99999% of the American population, he actually understands all these international nuclear treaties and their implications and what's going on. What we're talking about right now is what's in progress, the 7th review conference of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and how the United States is basically putting itself up against the entire rest of the world trying to find an excuse to bomb Iran. And apparently we're not coming up with one so far. Is my understanding correct, Mr. Prather, that Mohammed El-Baradei has given Iran a clean bill of health and reports that they have no nuclear weapons program at all?
Yeah. Like any other diplomat, he's an international diplomat, and a very large fraction of his budget comes from the United States. He always leaves a little weasel word, but he says that, you know, what he says is we've done the best we can, and we can find no indication whatsoever that they've got a nuclear weapons program. We've even gone in the places where the CIA told us to look, including some military sites, which the Iranians didn't want to let us in. But we went in, and we couldn't find a thing. We took environmental samples, sensitive environmental samples. It would have shown if there'd been any nuclear materials ever there and all that sort of thing. But let's see.
Go back to the quote.
I don't know how I got here, but let me kind of summarize this, the 6th versus 7th conference, if I can, very quickly. And then we can, any time we got left, we can finish up. What it amounts to is in the 6th conference, President Clinton committed us to a whole bunch of things that President Bush doesn't want to do, wants to get out of. But the rest of the world has come armed for bear, you know. They want to build on the promises that Clinton made back 5 years ago. And so we have this peculiar situation of, well, maybe it's worse than peculiar, where Iran, who is probably in the crosshairs of President Bush and the newer crazies' gun sites right now, standing up and giving these courageous speeches in defense of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, whereas our representative essentially says, well, you know, there are these other things that would be more effective, like the president's proliferation security initiative. But anyway, this is essentially the way the Khazari, I think his name is, who's the foreign minister of Iran, essentially closed his address to the 7th conference. And I'll just read you some excerpts.
Okay.
Non-proliferation, disarmament, and peaceful use are the pillars of the treaty. The international community has given us the responsibility to preserve the integrity of the treaty and to promote its implementation. This could be achieved if we take appropriate decisions on, and then there are four of them. First one, concrete steps towards ensuring universality of the non-proliferation treaty. That means getting Israel involved. Two, realization of the commitment he didn't say anything about Israel. I did that. I mean, let me read it again and leave out Israel. Number one, concrete steps towards ensuring universality of the NPT. Two, realization of the commitment by nuclear weapon states not to use or threaten to use nuclear weapons against non-nuclear weapon state parties to the treaty through concluding a legally binding instrument. Three, ensure and promote the basic rights of state parties to unhindered access to use nuclear technology for peaceful purposes without discrimination. And four, reconfirm the undertakings by the nuclear weapon states to implement 13 practical steps towards nuclear disarmament. Now that's Iran, you know, looking at, and I'm sure that number two is very high on their list, which is, they want some kind of binding agreement that will cause the United States not to use or threaten to use nuclear weapons against them.
Right, which we have threatened to do. We've put 7 nations on a list of countries that we might nuke.
Now,
none of them are.
You know, it's just an incredible speech by this foreign minister from Iran, and they're being, you know, I don't know. Maybe they have the same thoughts that we do, namely that the United States is not in a position to invade them, and that surely we wouldn't be crazy enough to bomb a Russian reactor and kill a bunch of Russians and the IAEA inspectors that are there. So maybe they think we're a paper tiger. I don't know about that, but all I know is that
It's pretty sad when Iran can get up in front of the conference and they're the supporter of the rule of law and America's the rogue state doing everything we can to undermine what you call our treaty, the NPT. It's America's baby from the beginning.
That's right.
And we're the ones undermining it.
Well, we certainly don't like the way it's going. I can tell you that.
I turned to Fox News, and Fox News says that we're in terrible danger because everybody knows that Iran is about to begin enriching uranium. So doesn't that necessarily mean that they're going to make a nuclear bomb out of it?
No, and I even saw El Baradei. Now, let me say some bad things, or let me poor mouth El Baradei for a minute.
All right.
He was on Charlie Rose here the other day. He's the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, and he's the guy who, in all his reports and in all of his interviews, has stated that as best they can tell, after 2 years of going just about anywhere and seeing anything they wanted to see, they can find no indication that Iran has ever had, now has, or intends to have a nuclear weapons program, okay? Now, after that, he goes on Charlie Rose, and then he says, well, but you know, once they have got those 50,000 gas centrifuges in that empty building they've got there now at Natanz, or how you pronounce that, N-A-T-A-N-Z,
mm-hmm.
It's an empty building right now. There are no gas centrifuges in there. Nobody is enriching uranium in Iran. It's just not happening. It's not a question of they're resuming uranium enrichment. They got nothing to resume. But okay, let's go back to El Baradei and Charlie Rose. He says once they have this facility underway and they've got it and they're cranking out low enriched uranium for reactor fuel, he says, once they have that capability, then it's a matter of months or at most a year till they could have a nuclear weapon. Well, there's a couple of things about that that are disingenuous, to say the least. First of all, how long is it going to take them to construct and get operating 50,000 gas centrifuges? They don't have any right now. You know, I mean, they got a pilot plant that's got about 160 of them in there, but they don't have any in the industrial strength, the commercial production facility. Okay. Now, second of all, once they do get this 50,000 centrifuge facility up and running, it will be operated under the watchful eyes of the International Atomic Energy Agency, cameras and environmental monitors and inspectors. And you just don't get enriched uranium suitable for making a nuclear weapon out of a facility that's been designed and is being operated to make reactor fuel. It just doesn't happen. You got to do a lot of reconfiguration and a lot of other things. Okay. So in order for them to do that, they first have to pull out of the non-proliferation treaty, they have to get rid of the IAEA inspectors, then they have to go in and make all these modifications to their facility, and so then they can start making bomb-grade uranium. Now,
and then they can start to worry about how to deliver it anywhere.
Well, no, it's worse than that. Now, the only thing once they've got this bomb-grade enriched uranium, it's very simple to make a gun-type weapon, like the one we dropped on Hiroshima, okay? That's relatively easy. In fact, if you've got two 60-pound pieces of weapons-grade, highly enriched uranium, you got to be careful or you're going to make inadvertently a nuclear weapon. If you bash those two things together, you're going to get some yield. It may not be very much, but you'll get some. If you shoot one piece at the other piece, with considerable velocity out of a cannon barrel or something like that, you'll get more yield. If you put all kinds of tamper and other kinds of things around the target so that the thing doesn't blow apart on you very rapidly, you might eventually get up to the yields that we got with the little boy, the weapon that we dropped on Hiroshima. But you do not make an implosion device in a couple of, you know, like that. I mean, you got to have.
So we're talking about one kiloton.
What?
We're talking about a kiloton or something, what you call the gun type.
Oh, no, the gun type weapon you can get up to, if you design it very carefully, you might get 20 kilotons.
Okay.
If you're going to make something that's deliverable, you're going to get a lot less than that because, you know, the little boy weighed 10,000 pounds. You know, you only got 120 pounds of weapons-grade, highly enriched uranium, but the device that you make that will keep those two, that supercritical mass together long enough to get appreciable yield, apparently, you know, weighs almost 10,000 pounds. You can't deliver that on a missile that so, anyway, you've got, what I'm saying is that El Baradei is being disingenuous and a scaremonger almost when he makes those kind of comments on Charlie Rose's show. Now, he's not a nuclear physicist. He's a lawyer. So it's conceivable that somebody at the IAEA needs to get El Baradei aside and say, look, you know, would you like a short course in nuclear weapons design? Because what you're saying is a bunch of, I don't know, what, manure.
Right, yeah, careful on the radio.
True. With, you know, and all those things have to happen in that order. You've got to build the facility first. Then you got to get it operating. And then you got to kick out the IAEA. And then you got to go in and modify the facility. And then you got to, and then it's relatively simple if you make a gun weapon. But if you want to make an implosion device, like the one we dropped on, like one that we dropped on Nagasaki, or the ones that are in our stockpile, you got to, you know, it's not a matter of a few months. It's years.
So this is all BS, basically. George Bush and his entire administration are completely full of it.
El Baradei was at best being disingenuous when he said that it would not take it would take less than a year for Iran to go from where they are now to having a nuclear weapon. That is just so much, as you say, horse hockey.
Well, and this is the same thing that they did in the run up to war with Iraq. Was as we just discussed with Ray McGovern. They decided on their policy, and then they decided they would fix all the intelligence to suit the policy.
But they didn't have
basically, it doesn't
El
really
Baradei.
Matter what the facts are.
They didn't have El Baradei going on and making disingenuous statements on Charlie Rose.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's even, you know, helping them now. At least he was against them then.
Well, he wants to serve another term. And, you know, that's been our, for what, 3 years now? Almost four, I guess. One of the objectives, maybe the principal objective of John Bolton has been to get rid of him.
Right.
Well, you know, that's bound you know, I would think if you're an international bureaucrat and you work for the IAEA for, I think it's been 20, I know, I think it's at least 17 years, and I think now it's 22 years that he's been an IAEA bureaucrat, El Baradei. And, you know, he's not ready to retire. And so, but he shouldn't go in to Charlie Rose and make those kind of statements because they're just not true.
Yeah, that's pretty
not
drastic
true.
Just for trying to keep his job. I think I'd rather lose my job than help justify a war.
And that's
you
why
know?
It's more remarkable than ever that the Iranian foreign minister would get up there and make this incredible speech, this opening speech. And what's more, I wasn't there. I didn't see him do it, but I seen him on Charlie Rose. And he's an impressive guy, this Iranian foreign minister. In fact, he was on Charlie Rose, I think, the same day as El Baradei.
Yeah, it's really interesting the way they set this all up because, I mean, basically, from the average American's point of view, all this is too complicated to understand. I mean, you know, additional protocol to your safeguards agreement, to your non-proliferation mm-hmm. treaty and what have you. Like, I just lost 10 people by saying that right now.
And then they have all of these... not only the New York Times and the Washington Post, and of course the Washington Times is a cheerleader, but the New York Times and Washington Post, they accept uncritically all these things that people say about, you know, 2 months they could have enough material to make a nuclear weapon, and within a year they could have a nuclear weapon. Well, you know, that's just not true at all, and it's even worse in that there are people at the Associated Press and Reuters and UPI who put their names on these stories. And usually, you know, it just says AP or UPI or Reuters. But these guys even have names. One of them's named John, J-A-H-N. Another guy's named Charbonneau. And I forgot what the...
And do these guys, they just lack the background to understand? Or are they helping be
well,
honest
I think it's deliberate. I mean, you know, they can't... They can't have been around the IAEA in Vienna and talked to any of these people and not have learned what I just told you.
Yeah, I mean, I get the idea that basically the media here basically amounts to the dumb blonde newsreader girl on Fox News. If it says nuclear weapons program, then it's a nuclear weapons program. They don't know. They don't really know the difference. But you think that these guys at the New York Times, they know good and well what they're doing. It's Judith Miller all over again with these people.
Well, worse than Judith Miller, almost. Yeah. Well, I don't know. They're not embedded with these guys.
Yeah.
In fact, you know. Well, I don't know. I don't know, Scott. It's but. You know, Scott Ritter has been misquoted in that he didn't say that we were going to go to war with Iran in June of 2005. What he
right.
said was the president had asked the Pentagon to have him a plan that he could implement by June of 2005. But there's just a lot of things that are converging towards June of 2005.
Yeah, it was in the news last week that we're delivering even more bumper buster bombs to... Bunker Buster Bombs?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, to Israel. They're warming up. All right, guys, I'm talking with Gordon Prather. It's the Republic Broadcasting Network, the weekend interview show. We'll be right back to wrap up after this week.
Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town.
My friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. We're wrapping up here with James Gordon Prather. He's a nuclear physicist and a regular writer for WorldNet Daily and Antiwar.com. And before I ask Gordon my last couple of questions, I want to urge you, beg you, please, local Austin audience, within the sound of my voice, go and vote no on the smoking ban. Please, you want to kill live music in Austin forever? Go and vote no on the smoking ban. And also, Casey Walker, Margo Clark, and Wes Benedict are your anti-toll road candidates for city council, place 1, 3, and 4. So please, go and vote no and vote for the anti-toll road candidates. And for the national and international audience, sorry about that, but it's very important to me. I don't want to have a tracking device in my car, and I want to be able to smoke wherever I feel like. So thank you. Now, Gordon.
Yeah.
Since we have very, very little time left, I think I'll open a brand new giant can of worms and ask about North Korea. It is your position, sir, that it's George Bush's fault that we are in a conflict with North Korea?
Yes, it is. When he came into office, when Bush came into office, all of the North Korean nuclear facilities were, quote-unquote, frozen. Under lock and seal by the International Atomic Energy Agency, and they had people on site and environmental monitors and all that sort of thing. Almost immediately, Bush signaled that he was not going to comply with certain provisions of the agreed framework that President Clinton had negotiated with the IAEA and with North Korea. And then in September of 2002, the United States, Bolton, somebody in the State Department, accused the North Koreans of violating that agreed framework by secretly having a uranium enrichment program that the IAEA didn't know about. The North Koreans vehemently denied it that day and every day since. And years later, when we showed the Chinese our so-called evidence, the Chinese says, well, that's no evidence. And so anyway, So we used that excuse of them having, we had some evidence, we claimed, that they had this secret uranium enrichment program. And we said, okay, you have violated. You have violated the agreed framework, and therefore we're gonna cut off the fuel oil shipments, and we're gonna stop this program of building nuclear reactors for you. And so then a few months after that,
they shut off the cameras, kicked out the IAEA, and started enriching uranium.
They started reprocessing those spent fuel rods that had, by all accounts, enough plutonium for Los Alamos to make 8 or 9 nuclear weapons. Now, how many nuclear weapons the North Koreans can make with that much plutonium, I don't know.
At least a couple.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if they know how to make a implosion device. And Sig Hecker, who's a former director of Los Alamos, was invited to go over there, and he saw almost everything that nuclear they had. And he told them, they asked him, what do you think about our nuclear deterrent? And he says, well, to me, that would mean having a deliverable device. I see that you've got the material, the plutonium that you'd need.
All right, sorry, Gordon, that's it. Antiwar.com, everybody.